Ladies and gentlemen, thinkers and debaters, fence sitters and firebrands, welcome to the Big Top of Talk, the high-flying, death-defying, no-holds-barred spectacle of ideas. This is Common Ground, where left meets right, up meets down, and common sense fights to survive. We're here to cut through the noise, bridge the divide, and maybe, just maybe, find a little middle ground along the way. So grab your coffee, buckle up, and keep your hands inside the conversation at all times. Because it's time for open minds, open dialogue, and maybe even a little common ground for the common good. Here are your hosts, Melissa Lucas and Scott Goodman.
We can all believe what we believe. Peacefully agree, disagree.
Hello and good morning. Scott Goodman here with Melissa Lucas, and welcome to another episode of Common Ground on KNTR Talk Radio 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free, Vox Populi, Voice of the People. Catch us here every Tuesday at 10 a.m. instead of 9 due to daylight savings. That's until spring. So today's show is about protests and civil unrest, comparing the anti-war, anti-government, and civil rights events of the 60s and the similar protests happening now through the lens of someone who was there and participated then, and see what's happening today. I do believe in the right to protest peacefully. Peacefully. What happened then as well as sometimes devolving into violence, which, as well as most people do not support that, is happening every day on TV and in social media. Some organizations then and now use the term by any means necessary to get their message across and achieve their goals. Well, let's work together across our nation to try to find peace and some common ground. Melissa, how about letting our listeners know about our guest today, the staff that makes the show happen, and let our listeners know how to reach out to us on Common Ground featured on KNTR Talk Radio.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Common Ground, right here live on KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free. You can call in at 928-854-5687 or text in 928-727-5566. And I'm really curious, you guys, send us a text about your earliest memory of protesting. Okay, Common Ground sponsors, Blonzy Steakhouse, Golden Valley Auto Parts and Hardware, Annie's Thrift Shop, Martin Swanee Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Kia, and Neat Pool and Supplies. Thank you guys so much for your sponsorship. We really appreciate your support. And remember, if you're traveling through the tri-state, you can listen to us on 106.3 in Golden Valley and Kingman, 106.5 in Laughlin, Bullhead, Mojave Valley, Needles, and 106.7 right here live in Lake Havasu City, Arizona. All right, Red Bull Ronnie, our co-creator's in the house. Marissa June, the producer, is here.
Woo!
As well as Paul Lavoie, our operations manager. Speaking of Paul Lavoie, I asked him before the show what his farthest back memory of protest was. His was forced busing, school busing. Forced busing had to do with segregation back in Las Vegas. My earliest memory was the Rodney King riots. I asked my husband, and his was Vietnam. And my cook this morning, I asked him, his was Kent State. Today, welcoming to the show is Vern Nygren. Welcome to the show. And you are a liberal independent, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So reaching way back into your brain, the farthest back as you can remember, like what you saw on television, what the media was pushing as the big demonstration protests, what do you remember?
I don't think I understand the question.
Your earliest memory of a protest.
I grew up in a small town in Michigan that had no protest, and I went to Michigan State, and as a freshman, I was going between classes, and I walked by a anti-war protest, an anti-Vietnam War protest. They had about 12 protesters, and that was in 1965. And I stopped to talk to them, and I ended up spending the night.
You joined the protest.
I joined the protest. And they were members of SDS, and so that's why.
What is SDS for people?
Students for a Democratic Society. It's founded by Tom Hayden in a Port Huron statement. Tom Hayden was Jane Fonda's husband.
Interesting. Yeah. So was this protest peaceful?
Yes.
And peaceful means what to you?
There was no violence.
It's
but
a
it
fair
was,
question.
But they were surrounded by the police, though. There was a cordon of police around it, which was interesting because I spent the night there with them. And,
with the cops staring at you all night?
Yes, with the cops staring at us all night.
So peaceful, just to clarify what you were asking, I'm going to go with blood and arrest and no blood and no arrest.
Okay.
That would be
that. So that's the definition?
Speak. For me, it is.
Right.
I mean, if people aren't hitting each other and arresting each other, then... Well, there's probably
it would
not
appear
violent.
That we have different views on peaceful and, I mean, not you
well,
and
what
I,
is your view?
Not you and I. I'm just saying that there are other views as what is peaceful and not, because I'm, again, I have a location in Oregon, so I'm there every week as well as being here. And Portland was on fire, you know, for 100 days after George Floyd, and they were calling that peaceful. Protesting, even though there was fire,
well,
blood,
that was their
and arrest.
But
it was on the
sense.
News, though, that it was peaceful protesting.
Well, I remember vividly during the protest when there was I believe it was a Los Angeles news reporter with fire in the background on live television.
Was this George Floyd protest?
Yeah, saying it was peaceful.
Same, yep.
Yeah, so I get that. But I want to talk to our guest, though, about, you know, your experiences in the genesis of the civil rights, anti-government protesting, and back in the 60s. You started, I think you told me, in 65?
Yes. The protest I was just talking about was totally peaceful. It was just people with signs. The second one that I saw, you could say, was violence in a way that there was like maybe a dozen protesters that were occupying the... administration building, mm-hmm. and the administration had called in the police, and what they did is they sent up a gauntlet with a bus, and they picked up each one of the protesters and sent them down the gauntlet, beat the hell out of them, put them on the bus. And I saw people who were standing around saying that I don't believe in the protesters, and I think they shouldn't be interrupting my education, but I don't like what the police are doing here, so they become radicalized. But that was, so you could say that was violent, but it was police violence. And most of the violence that I saw in the 60s was actually, I would say, perpetrated by the police or started by the police rather than the protesters.
From what I understand, the weapons of choice by the police and authorities, given the orders from people way above their pay grade, was the nightstick and tear gas.
Yes.
And that's what they used as their weapons. They felt that it was the least lethal way of breaking up these protests, that their higher-ups told them, we need to break these up because it doesn't look good. And they wanted to quell the protests. So did you ever experience personally in the 60s violence against your groups or yourself? You personally?
I had a tear gas canister land next to me. I had a corduroy jacket on, and it was a little bit of rain. And somebody picked it up and threw it back. And after that, I went into the student union, and I could walk into a room, and I could empty the room because the tear gas is stuck to my jacket. So, but
you did experience that.
Yes. I also saw at Michigan State there's a Michigan Avenue. One side is the city of East Lansing, the other side is Michigan State, and they had police and soldiers lining the street to keep the two separate. People would break through it and pick up garbage cans and throw them through the door, through the front
windows.
Which
is, of course, vandalism,
which
is
vandalism,
violence.
Yes.
Right.
So do you believe that current protests that you're seeing, where they're, as you were saying, near your restaurant for 100 days and attacking ICE facilities and ICE agents and their vehicles, do you believe that this is a proper way to protest, or do you think it's a little over the top?
Like, it's over the top. You and I had a conversation earlier, and I talked about the black inner cities burning. If you take that out of the equation, I think the protests in the 60s were much more peaceful than the people are today. It seems to be burning cars and smashing windows and burning trash cans or whatever they're doing.
Escalated.
It's escalated more. That was rare when I...
Yeah, so the difference between agitators and protesters then and today is the one huge element that also we discussed driving up here is social media. We have huge entities that are driving social media commentary that are bringing people together, that are fomenting discord and bringing people into the protest movement that may never have even known about it, let alone participated in it. And what I'm seeing today that's different is, being a constitutional conservative, I support every human being's right to protest what they feel is not correct or not right in their world. Okay? Knock yourselves out. But don't infringe on my rights, and don't commit any violence against personal property or individuals or government officials or entities. Okay? Do your thing. But don't do it violently.
Social media definitely is dumping gasoline on fires all the time. What the one thing that we have, our most recent protest in Portland is ICE. There's an ICE facility, and it's getting hit every day. After the sun goes down, the protesters come out, and they just, like, live right there. I'm not sure where they all come from, but they show up at night after the sun goes down. And recently they've been dressing in costumes, like those inflatable frog. There was a frog guy, and then a bunch of other people came in costumes.
How cute.
Yeah, it's just, they're trying to, there's actually a really bad guy that's in that costume, but he's trying to make it look like he's not a bad guy. The news, though, had, one of the news stations was panning across the crowd, showing the protest. This is whatever day the protest is. And there was a bunch of people there, and it's funny that you say the social media thing, because the people there were all holding their phones, and they were like, there was like literally, okay, so maybe there's, 50 people in the protest. There's actually only 12 people that are actually protesting.
And all the rest,
are all people with their phones, filming the frog guy and filming the ICE people. And it was just, and then, when the news camera showed that, I was just like, oh my gosh, it's just interesting.
Well, Vern, as you look from the lens, as I said in the opening comments, if you look through the lens of someone who's been through this before and seen what you've seen back in the heyday of the 60s protest, and you see and hear what you're hearing today, what fundamental differences, or what do you feel is different? Because the actual topics and the actual reasons for protests are very similar to the 60s. So what are your thoughts on today versus then?
Well, one of the things I find most interesting is what motivated me and people like me was learning about the misinformation coming from the government. I tell you, I joined SDS, and they had a meeting every month, and there were lectures and other things too. But when we went to those meetings, we read French newspapers or Dutch newspapers or listened to news sources from around the world that were telling us the opposite of what our government was telling us, body counts and things that are happening and all that. So what motivated us was disinformation, but that was passed from people going from one campus to another one. Without social media.
Right.
Spreading it. Today, it's instantaneous with the social media.
Yeah, you would have to go from campus to campus with leaflets.
Right.
And flyers. That's what you did.
Yeah, and yeah. We had people that did that. And they, at that time, they were, what would they call today, men in black. There were people that followed them. Mm-hmm. And I witnessed myself. A guy came to my house, and he said, I just drove across the country. I've been to this different campus and this one. And he said, and everywhere I went, this black car with these two guys in it followed me. And I said, you're just paranoid. He said, come here. We walked down the end of the street. He said, look down the end of the street, what you see? And I looked. And
well, we're getting ready to go. We're trying to interrupt you. We're going on a quick break here on KNTR Talk Radio, 106.7, 5 and 3.
Voice of the free.
Catch you here in a minute or two.
Threads of old glory come undone. Am I the only one not brainwashed?
Happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Welcome back to Common Ground, right here live on KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free. Text us in at 928-727-5566 or call in at 928-854-KNTR. Marissa, what you got?
All right, we're going to give a quick shout-out to our sponsors that makes this show possible to bring to you, starting with Blonzy Steakhouse. Mouth-watering steaks and a breakfast menu that has everyone talking. Whether it's date night or brunch with friends, great taste is always on the menu. Blonzy's is where Havasu eats, off London Bridge Road and Desert Hills. Next, we have Golden Valley Auto Parts and Hardware. They're the small-town store with the biggest auto and hardware selection in the area. Find what you want online at goldenvalleyhardware.com and pick it up in-store today, just off Bowie Road in Golden Valley. And lastly, Annie's Thrift Shop. Shopping at Annie's Thrift Store isn't just about great deals. It's about giving back. Every purchase helps support local charities, making your find more than just a bargain. It's a blessing. Annie's Thrift Store, thrifting with a purpose.
All right. Thank you, Marissa. All right. Back to the show. So, Vern, I just asked you if you still participate in protests, and you said no. And then we were talking about the statues coming down, and I had asked if that was something that was new. And my co-host and the guest here both said that is new.
Taking flags down, but not statues.
Not statues. Yeah, the statues was the George Floyd thing, and it seemed like that
It has nothing to do with George Floyd.
But wasn't that when it started, though,
the
protesting?
In the same vicinity. It started with the woke movement about 5 or 6 years ago. So what really ended up happening was it became common knowledge, apparently, to a large group of high school and college students and other adults that cultural icons and political icons, explorers, et cetera, were either racist or, okay, George Washington owned slaves. Thomas Jefferson not only owned slaves, he impregnated one, and they're descendants of him and his, anyway. They believe that, in many cases, rightfully so, that Columbus subjugated and removed and helped facilitate the taking of the lands of the Native Americans when he landed.
Didn't
here.
We? Yeah, we changed that holiday from Columbus Day to
Indigenous
people.
Well, yeah. So what they did was they said they went one step further. They said, okay, so let's, as a way of protesting, let's rename schools, let's rename roads, let's take down statues.
Pancake syrup.
What it is factually is that it's removed. Yeah, the Indian from Land of Lakes.
Yeah.
So what it's done is it's denying our history. We have done many things in our country that are great and wonderful. We've done many things in our country that are deplorable. But to deny that they happened and to erase history is not the way to go. By removing every statue, let's say, for Columbus, and removing Columbus Day parades and all things named after Christopher Columbus, what happens in 100 years? Effectively, Christopher Columbus didn't exist. They'll just remove him from every frame of reference from
history.
The history books. We can't do that. It happened. Good, bad, or ugly, history happens. We make mistakes. We do great things. But we can't deny both, either or both.
I wonder what they'll think about us in 50 years from now.
Well, in reference specifically to protest, back in the 60s, they protested, let's see, these were the, according to three levels deep on root causes for the protests in the 60s, systemic racism and discrimination, economic disparity, police brutality and mistrust, unmet expectation and urban neglect, and the Vietnam War. Sounds right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, which drives unrest today, political polarization, tribalism, economic inequality, erosion of trust, and disinformation. Well, wait, we have a call.
Sounds like pretty similar.
Hello, caller. What can you do for us today? We'd love to hear from you here on KNTR Common Ground.
Hello, Scott. Everybody, this is Wayne.
Hi, Wayne.
Hey, Wayne.
Hello. You asked to call in with the earliest.
Yes.
Can remember.
Yes. What's the earliest one you remember?
I was born and raised south side of Chicago, and the one thing that I was eighth grade, I think I graduated eighth grade in 1968, and when Martin Luther King was assassinated, that was a scary time.
1968.
Yep. So did they have a bunch of protests after Martin Luther King was assassinated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They called them, back then, a lot of times they called them demonstrations, you know, and then they were turned into like race riots. But I don't, in my area, I don't remember a lot of violence. I don't, you know, there was no buildings burning. It was a lot of fighting, you know, a lot of physical fighting. And the other one I remember was about a couple of 2 years later, I think, maybe 1971, was Vietnam. Remember Lieutenant Cali, the My Lai massacre?
That correct. Was, the trial and everything.
Do you remember that too?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so that was a big thing. Again, there was a lot of demonstrations, and one thing, they weren't taking flags down. They were putting a lot of American flags up. So, there wasn't a lot of damage. You know, there was a lot of, like I said, physical fighting, big police presence, and it was a scary time.
Well, it is a scary time. Wayne, we really love your calls, and please keep calling in every time, and thanks for calling today.
Yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you.
Great show.
You have a great day.
Yeah, you guys text us in at 928-727-5566, or you can call in, too, at 928-854-5687. Curious about your thoughts on this.
So, before the call, we were about key drivers of unrest, identity politics, social media's role, disillusionment with the system, and government actions and neglect. Basically, it's the same thing.
Money and religion?
Well,
power?
No, it's
police.
It's people vote their wallets. It's generally about money. Money from the way the government controls the money, the way that people feel that they don't have enough money. The polarization, though, the political divide that we have, these are the same things that have been going on for a long, long time. Hell, do you know why we're a country? Because taxation, the Tea Party, back in before the American Revolutionary War, they were protesting. They dressed up as Native Americans, and they went onto a British boat, and they threw their tea overboard. Okay, so this is not new. They've been protesting since biblical times.
Right.
The difference is today, though, is social media.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, if Vern here, back in the 60s, and his compatriots that he worked with, were going from campus to campus, speaking in small little whispered groups, handing out flyers for events that were coming up in protest, they'd have to go from place to place. Think of a city like Los Angeles or in Detroit area. How many colleges and universities were there? Dozens.
Yeah.
And you'd have to go to each one just in one little state.
And passing out papers. And mm-hmm.
Now you type out a paragraph, a couple pictures, you press a button, and it's worldwide.
Instantaneously worldwide.
You know, so what we're seeing today, the type of unrest that we're seeing today is media and social media driven, is, as we discussed when we were driving up here from your house, I believe that a lot of it is paid protesters, many of them. Highly paid protesters and organizers who help take a hodgepodge of people that may not be well organized and help them become more organized. Go ahead, Vern.
The social media of the 60s were what we called underground newspapers. In fact, I kept a whole bunch of
stuff. I have them at my store.
And I brought them in to give them.
You have underground newspapers?
Oh, yeah. I kept
amazing.
All the flyers from the protests I went to and all the paperwork and
cool.
The underground newspapers were the social media. Every campus and every active center had published a newspaper of some kind, and it was like social media today, except the underground newspapers and Zap Comics. And
yeah, the things that he brought me, when I started reading them, it was incredible. Oh, we have another call. Wonderful.
All right, welcome to Common Ground. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
How are you doing? What can I help you with today?
Are you, is this the protest, your first protest?
Yes. What was your first one that you remember?
Gardena High School, California, 1969. Big, big protest with the teachers walking out, and it was like, it was a big mess.
Why did they walk out?
They were protesting wages, of course. What else?
Oh.
I guess you could call it a protest.
Did you live in Gardena at the time?
I was born and raised in Gardena.
My family had a business in there on Rosecrans and San Pedro Street in Gardena.
And it was a peaceful protest, I'm assuming?
Well, yeah, the students got carried away. I had a Super 8 movie camera back then and took it to school, and I still have that reel.
Really?
Really, you should post that.
That's pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
You know, my fondest memory of Gardena High School was when I was in an unaffiliated school. We played Gardena, and they had metal detectors going into the football field, and this is back in the 70s.
Right. Whoa.
Okay, yeah, there was we had a problem with the Narbonne High School, I believe.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate the call and sharing your memory with us, and hope you call again and keep on listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job. Absolutely, good show. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too.
Huh, so that's so interesting to me. Like,
I find it interesting, though, that you brought up the topic, and it's amazing that we're getting those good responses
because
from everybody.
People, I mean, it's my angle was more of what was the media pushing. That's kind of why I was asking, like, what do you remember if you reach way back to your childhood? I also asked my children what news influenced things that they remembered the farthest back they could remember. One kid told me that it was O.J. Simpson. One kid told me JonBenet Ramsey. That's what they remember because it was on the news, and it was on that when we'd stand in line at the check, you know, the, all the magazines and stuff, like that was their first memory. And these are my children. That's what I asked them, and that's what they said. So, Am I in trouble?
I don't think, well, you didn't use a curse word.
I'm sorry, Red Bull Ronnie, but it is, I'm just telling you the truth.
No, I get it. It was just, I didn't expect to hear that, but it was
interesting. That was a bit of a surprise.
Well, it's
so,
true.
So meanwhile,
what
though,
do you remember the farthest back memory
so,
like on the
so
news,
Vern,
you know?
So as you look on today's protests and the level of violence that you see sometimes, not all the time, do you feel that your movement period, the, what you were working on, working with, and very passionate about in the mid to late 60s, do you feel that it is more of a genuine, heartfelt movement that you can that people could get behind more than today, or do you think it's the same?
I can't speak for the people today. I just know.
Looking at it from the outside, looking and knowing your knowledge from what you were up to. Because I believe personally that it was much more grassroots.
It was more grassroots earlier in the 60s, and it was more genuine. You had to go out of your way to participate, not just click a button on a phone or through social media or whatever.
Well, all I know is this. As I look back doing my show prep for this episode, I found that the pictures that I saw in imagery from the protests in the 60s were a lot more grassroots, people-oriented, less violent, more down-to-earth, more... they were passionate, and they were screaming, and they were yelling, and they were stomping their feet.
I'll tell you another thing, too. I know this is going to sound funny, but it was fun.
Sure.
I don't see today's as being fun, but when I went to a protest in the 60s, it was an enjoyable experience.
Wasn't that the first time you smoked weed?
That was, I told you, was at the protest.
Was
yes.
that the protest, yeah, with the yeah. cops
so,
sitting there.
Yeah. So, Vern, so my belief is, and maybe you can corroborate this, is that the whole idea was to poke an eye poke a finger in the eye of government.
Right.
And it was more of a statement.
There was an exhilarating feeling, too. I was in Washington, D.C. with thousands and thousands of other people. And police all over. People were lighting up joints and pipes and passing them. And the cops were just standing looking. There's just too many people to do anything about it. There's kind of an exhilarating feeling about when you do that.
Sure.
Oh,
you're getting away with it.
I see. Yeah. Like if there's a whole bunch of people protesting, the cops can't do anything.
That's
so
right.
Now's your chance
to storm
the Capitol or whatever.
Speaking of that, we'll go there another time. I believe that it was more joyful. It was more camaraderie.
It was.
I think what you're seeing today is more angry. Is more violent,
agreed.
Angry, and bitter.
Fed by social media.
There's no kumbaya moment while they're all... Are we going on a break already?
It would be nice.
Wow, time flies. We'll get back to you on Common Ground, KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3.
Voice of the Free.
Catch you here in a minute or two.
Welcome back to Common Ground right here live on KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free. Call us in at 928-854-KNTR or text in 928-727-5566. Marissa, you got a couple more sponsors for us?
There we go. All right, we're going to give a shout-out to our last two sponsors that makes this show possible. Martin Swanee, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Kia. Since 1985, Martin Swanee Kingman has been more than a dealership. It's a legacy built on honest deals and handshakes, celebrating 40 years of doing right by folks one happy driver at a time. Located off East Andy Devine in Kingman. And lastly, Neat Pool and Supply, serving Lake Havasu since 1970. From expert consultations to top-notch supplies and service, they've got everything for pools and spas. Family-owned and operated right in the heart of Havasu, it's where your backyard oasis begins. Located on 52 Scott Drive.
All right, thank you so much. Okay, welcome back to the show. Okay, where were we?
Well, I could tell you where I'd like to go for a minute. I'm going to get a lot of people not liking me from what I'm about to say. There was a movement that happened in the mid-70s, and it was a very, very popular, large movement. It was the ERA, Equal Rights Amendment movement, okay? The concept was sound. Women, and I agree with this 100%, should receive the same fair compensation for their work, the same rights across the board with everything a man does. Not a problem with that. But there's something called unintended consequences. So the Equal Rights Movement created something that never happened before in the history of America. It created, with the push of the media and the ERA movement, created a two-parent working household. Never existed before. In the past, there, everything you see on TV and shows and commercials, there was always someone home with the kids, one family member, whether it was the man or the woman, mostly the women, and there would be a fixture in the household. And when the kid would get dropped off at school by the mom or the father and picked up by the mother or the father at the end of the school day, they would go home. Someone was there to do homework with them, give them some food.
Leave it to Beaver.
Right. It was, that was the environment that we had for generations. And then all of a sudden it became the norm to have a two-parent working household. Great. Women have the right to do exactly that. Men have the right to do the same. But it created a latchkey situation where kids were getting dropped off in the morning and getting picked up in the afternoon at 5 o'clock when one of the two people would get off work, take them home after Parks and Recs for 2.5 hours, and both parents would come home. And in general, they were too tired after working all day to spend the correct and the appropriate amount of time with their kids, help them with their homework. They want to come home. They want to maybe have a drink, have something to eat, relax a little bit after working all day. I know I do. But what I believe ended up happening was it created an environment where children were left with less parenting than ever before. And for me, in my observations, the net result was kids who were more, let's just say, running amok than they ever did. Not every kid.
Or being raised by the television.
Correct.
Or the social
without
media.
Proper, exactly, without proper supervision.
Whatever. I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
So I would have been that first generation. My mom owned a business.
Right.
And my dad worked. So they came home at 5 o'clock.
That's exactly right. And so my point is this. Protesting can sometimes have unintended consequences. And in this particular case that I just addressed, we're going to be paying for this for generations because it's now normal for a two-parent working household.
It is normal.
It
you
is
can't,
the norm.
You actually can't really survive
it
unless,
is the, well, unless you're
really
making,
got a good job.
So what I'm saying about protesting is I agree with protesting, and I agree with stating your mind and your passion to get results that you're looking for. But beware of what those net results are. So in reference to the ICE protest. Oh, we
be
have
careful
another
what
caller.
You wish for.
Thank you, caller. You're here on KNTR Common Ground. How can we help you today?
Oh, yeah. This is Donna from Keenan.
Hi, Donna.
I'm like you, Melissa. I don't really remember. The earliest protest was probably the Rodney King thing. I didn't really start watching TV until the late 70s, and I didn't watch any news until maybe later when President Reagan was shot.
It was just all over the news. It was traumatic, mm-hmm. I guess, and that's why it imprinted as my first memory as of the riots.
Well, I'll tell you what, Donna, it was a very traumatic time for America, and just to give you some background, I owned a pawn shop in the outskirts of Los Angeles during the protests when they were looting and burning pawn shops and shooting them up. And I was on my roof for 3 days with guns protecting my business for 3 days. So, yeah, that was pretty traumatic for all people involved, whether you were there or not.
That's so scary.
Well, Donna, thank you for the call.
Thank you for calling.
We appreciate it.
Can I comment on something else?
Sure.
On the ERA or equal rights thing, I was thinking about, I was lucky. I had two parents at home by the time I was come along a few years later because my dad was 22 years older than my mom, so he was retired.
Well, that's
by the
awesome.
Time I was 30.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate
thank
it, Donna.
You.
Thank you.
We have a text
yes.
as well.
Yep, I got a text. It says, good morning. You're absolutely correct. The protests used to be against a government entity or position. Now the protests are angrier, and they are directly against the voters who don't agree with them. I wholeheartedly support their right to protest, and I'll even defend it. I just don't need to have to be verbally attacked, have my bottles thrown at me, and my car being vandalized, which happened in Wheeler Park at the Counter No Kings protest. I will not support people who have taken it to an escalation of violence or bad behavior. Amen. Thank you for your text.
Well, thank you for the text.
100% agree with that.
Now, on that note, As I've said on the show before, common ground, we cannot generally find any common ground with fringe operators on either end of the spectrum. 10, 15, 20% on the right, 10, 15, 20% on the left. We're never going to get anywhere with those people because they're fixed on their way of thinking. They're completely pigeonholed into that. They're never going to be swayed in the other direction or to find common ground. But there's 60-plus percent to maybe 70% in the middle that is the majority of people that are comfortable having liberal or conservative friends and family that are willing to listen to maybe find some common ground. And guess what? Maybe find some love and some peace and some understanding in our country
right.
for a change.
And it's okay to ask questions.
Now, you getting vandalized, that's no good. But I can tell you something just before the break. The difference between what you did, Vern, in the 60s, where you were protesting against the government, against this, but you weren't attacking people. You weren't going to a police facility and burning it down like they did in Oregon
right.
and other places. You weren't going to federal officers and lobbing rocks at them and crashing their cars. Now, today, what would happen if these ICE protesters were successful and they drove ICE away from all of these different communities that needed the protection of the federal government? They just left. If ICE left, the police left, what would happen?
Who are you going to call?
Anarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't
anarchy.
Call Ghostbusters. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, who are you going to call, right? Exactly. Yeah, anarchy is what you would have.
So with the anger and the violence escalating in some areas, what did they actually believe their net result is going to be? So they injure a few ICE officers. So they damage some vehicles. You don't think they have the highest application rate in the history of the police departments and the ICE agencies?
Well, sure. They're getting all these 50,000 sign on.
Tons of money and giving them huge benefits mm-hmm. to sign on board. So they're not going to run out of ICE agents. So all of you protesters are throwing rocks, trying to put Molotov cocktails, throw them at vehicles. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
They're just going to bring more, and they're going to bring National Guard. It's going to get to a tipping point where the government's going to say enough is enough. Short fuse. They're going to, it's not going to be pretty. They're going to lock down these cities. You know, you're from Oregon where
right.
you have some serious
yeah,
protests.
Portland has a problem.
What happens if they just bring in 2,000 National Guard troops there? They're going to quell all of it. It'll shut everything down. Anyone who's protesting or doing the wrong thing, breaking the law, they're just going to get arrested. Their protests are being handled with kid gloves right now.
Right.
Now, Vern, you experienced in the 60s the exact opposite, that there were no kid gloves, the gauntlet of police with batons, tear gas, et cetera.
First time I ran over a hill and saw a line of National Guard, it took my breath away.
Oh,
too.
I bet.
Well, and like we briefly talked about Kent State.
Yeah.
I was at Kent State that I'm talking about
when
that first happened. Yeah.
You were there?
No, I went to Michigan State then. Actually, one of the guys that died at Kent State lived in my dorm the semester before that. He transferred to Kent State.
Oh, my gosh.
They got shot.
So
I didn't know him.
I imagine you were involved in the protesting then.
Yes, yes.
Was that the biggest?
That was the first time I ever saw a National Guard.
Was that the largest?
So after Kent State happened, did your groups, SDS and others, get involved in Kent State protests?
Yes.
And what were those like? You had to have a huge following because that was such a seminal moment protest-wise.
Yes. That was my cook's first memory was the Kent State.
I say that's what brought out the National Guard. I said that's the first time I ever saw that. I say, as an American, seeing that, it just shocked me to see a whole row of National Guard because we were protesting.
And they're all armed?
They're all armed, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And we're defenseless students just protesting
right after Kent State.
The day after.
Did you guys leave or what happened?
That was actually the time that I got the tear gas on my jacket.
So
and went back into the student union and cleared it out.
Oh, wow.
So an interesting thing. We had two instances happen in the last number of years about regarding conservatives and Republicans. We had the Charlie Kirk, which happened recently, an assassination of a very popular conservative movement person, leader of the movement. For conservatism, as well as the January 6th, which we'll be discussing when we come back.
In the 60s, that happened every month, it seemed like.
But hold on. The difference is.
The difference is the violence.
The difference is that it was Republicans that were either attacked or attacking. Very rarely do Republicans get involved in big protests. But we'll get back to that when we get back to talk about Common Ground here. 106.7, 5 and 3.
Voice of the Free.
Catch you here in a minute for our last segment.
Welcome back to Common Ground right here live on 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free. Having a great conversation with my co-host Scott Goodman and Vern Nygren, our guest today, talking about protests and the differences between maybe January 6th and the George Floyd protests.
Well,
the most recent big ones.
What I want to, I got to ask you a specific question, Vern. You know, while you were in the moment and involved in what you were involved with, did you feel that you were bringing the passion, or the passion was being brought to you? In other words, were you just a messenger, or were you delivering the message?
Both.
So you were motivated, you were coming up with ideas, and you were coming up with plans, battle strategies, so to speak, as well as taking the input from the other people around you to get a cohesive strategy together. Were you a motivated or a motivator, or both?
I was motivated more than a motivator.
And okay. You were at Kent State itself, the actual
No, I was at protest. Michigan State, which is close to
but
Kent State.
But you went to the protest?
Yes.
And was that the largest protest you'd ever been to?
No.
What is the largest protest you've
Washington,
ever been
D.C.
to?
Washington, D.C.
No, Washington, D.C., the one in front of the White House that has a protest every single
day.
Yeah,
there's
day
a million people there then.
Ever? A million people?
It's called the mall.
What was the protest
like
for?
Like in 1970, anti-Vietnam War.
Wow.
Forrest Gump.
A million people.
Remember
Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Yes, that's when you're looking at the Washington Monument, standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Okay, that's my husband's first memory of protest. Big protest, he said, was Vietnam. He said the draft protest.
Well, it was all-encompassing. It was the draft. It was the war itself. They hated LBJ, and they hated the propagation of the war. And the people coming back in caskets.
Was it violent, that one at D.C.?
That was peaceful. That
a
was
million
peaceful.
People?
Yeah, it was peaceful.
A million people.
Well, you
and
had...
They could hold it together.
I hitchhiked. I told Scott, I had a motorcycle and two cars, but I hitchhiked there and back because it was more fun to hitchhike.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
and not have driving the traffic.
Think about this for a moment. Did you ever see the movie Forrest Gump?
Yes.
The scene where he's speaking in uniform and he sees Jenny crossing the water in the big Washington mm-hmm. Monument, that mm-hmm. was that protest.
Yep.
There were a million people there.
A million people.
And now Reggie Jackson tried to have the Million Man March.
Jesse Jackson.
Yeah, baseball player. You got a baseball protest.
Yeah.
So Jesse Jackson and his Rainbow Coalition tried to have a Million Man March. It was unsuccessful. He had a march, but it clearly wasn't close to a million people. Now, what I'd like to see in Common Ground nationwide eventually is to get, I don't know about a million, but to get a lot of people together, hand in hand, arm in arm, liberals and conservatives, to fight, go to Washington, have the politicians fight for us instead of for themselves or for their parties. That's where we've really lost it. Protest-wise, I couldn't name for the life of me what any of these people who are protesting today, what they're protesting for. They're only protesting against. It's not what they want, it's what they don't want. Okay, and there's a big fundamental difference for me. They don't know what they want, they just know what they don't like and what they don't want.
Yeah.
They don't have a message other than get rid of this stuff and hatred.
Yeah, the 60s protests are pretty much single focus against the war, and they said then they added to that civil rights, but
they wanted to bring the troops home.
Right.
Their goal was to get us out of Vietnam and get the troops home.
And some people's kids were drafted. They didn't go there because they wanted to.
Hundreds of thousands of people were drafted. All of them had a draft number.
I can't imagine that. Like my son getting taken, that just is so,
my
that
first
would be
year,
so hard.
I went to a auditorium with 5,000 other guys, and I had to take a test, and you had to pass the test to stay in school and not get drafted.
Yeah. Did people want to get drafted?
No.
Unless you wanted to escape prison.
Yeah.
They had choices in the courts sometimes.
And we don't have a draft anymore.
No.
It's been gone.
So I want to, we only have a minute or two left. Common ground. I believe that the common ground is that we agree that civil protest and peaceful protesting is something we can all agree should happen.
Yes.
Our country's based on it.
Yes.
And violence is no way to do it, and that's definitely common ground. As a conservative Republican, I don't want to see anybody shot or killed over their religious beliefs, over their political beliefs, or their social status. I think it's abhorrent. We should embrace people's differences. That's what makes our country great. I do want to tell our listeners, though, we only have about a minute left, and we will not be on the air next week or the week after, resuming on the 6th of January.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
And we will be returning in 2 weeks' time for our next show. 2 weeks, yeah.
Well, January 6th.
January 6th is a million years from now.
I know.
But we'll be in a new year. Like same show, same people in a new year. But I want to wish all of you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah, as we're in Hanukkah right now, and a Happy New Year. And I want to wish my wonderful co-host here a blessed year coming up.
We'll just continue
grinding out another year on common ground.
If I didn't get fired for my Bill Clinton comment today.
KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3.
Voice of the Free.
Catch you again in 2 weeks.
See you next Tuesday. Oh.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The Voice of the Free.